I would definitely put it in the top 10.
It's so good.
A lot more thought has gone into the story.
I think it's awesome.
This is a spy movie disguised as a superhero movie.
There's such clear-cut good and bad.
It's definitely got some horrific elements.
Well, once we go there, you're just going to throw physics out the window.
That's not how this works. That's not how any of this works.
This is like the Fast Times at Ridgemont High of the fantasy world. Yep. Wow. That was something else. Now, kids, your homework tonight is to go home and watch this on television.
At that point in the script, you're actually rooting for her.
And I am just giggling maniacally through the whole thing.
When slashers came home.
I love that they just throw you in there and say, okay, find your way out. A lot of people don't like horror movies.
It's a coming of age, not a horror movie.
But I still love it because it's a slice of life, and I'm okay with that. Tim really wants to like this movie.
I loved the production design.
I wanted more from this movie.
Your reality is not what you think it is.
Oh my God, am I destroying our podcast?
I am Milo, your medical interface liaison operator.
I have to be sick.
No illness or abnormality detected.
You mean I'm healthy?
Unlock the door right now.
I cannot comply with that request at this moment.
Milo, I'm begging you, open the pod.
I cannot comply with that request. Oxygen level 35%. Incoming call.
Hello?
Liz, we're running out of time.
Tell me where to start.
You have all the answers. Figure out what triggers your memories.
Who is this? Why are you doing this? What the hell do you want?
Too late. They're here.
Interruption. Oxygen level approaching critical threshold.
Hello, hello, hello out there in YouTube and podcast land. You have reached Johnny Has the Keys, where we talk about horror movies and science fiction films and those key elements that lift and or separate them from the average genre fare. Are you new to us? Well, David and I have been talking about movies since the dawn of time, and we decided one day we'd do a little podcast and might try to hit every single one of them. So we go through by the decades of an entire century's worth of genre filmmaking. We pick a few from each decade and we mix it all up so that you get a good variety of a bunch of different stuff. This is an unscripted podcast. You may hear us stammer or stall, and it's because we're searching for the perfect word, or we really don't know what we're going to say because we had a senior moment.
That's right.
But if you are coming back, then you know this. You like us. That's why you're here, and we would like to welcome you. I'm here with my good friend and host, or co-host, David Horton. David, how are you doing?
I'm doing good, and we start with a little icebreaker for those of you who are new. And what have we done in our genre-related or semi-genre-related week? And mine was mostly in your realm, but also yes, although I would not classify what I watched as a horror movie. I would classify it more as a thriller, but it is based on a Stephen King short story. So there's that. I kind of got hooked into it because a friend of mine kept saying, you got to watch this, you got to watch this. You do a podcast on horror, you got to watch this. So I said, okay. I watched Secret Window, the Johnny Depp.
Oh my
Depp
God, I haven't seen that thriller in a long time.
I had never seen it. So that's why. It came out in 2004, directed and written by David Kopp, I think is his name. It may be Cope, K-O-E-P-P, who I do like, and I've liked everything he's basically done, including Jurassic Park and several others.
Yeah, he's done a lot of writing in Hollywood, a lot of screenplays.
Yeah, And the synopsis basically is very Stephen King. A successful writer is having kind of a crisis. He's just had a divorce, or he's going through a divorce. He's separated from his wife, and he goes away to a remote cabin to basically be depressed and lay around and nap on the couch all day and try to write something new. A stranger shows up and says, I'm here to punish you because you stole my story. And he has no idea what the guy is talking about, but then he mentions a story. He leaves him a manuscript. He reads through the manuscript, and it looks almost word for word identical to the story that he published years and years ago. This guy says he published it before he did, but then he counters him and says, no, actually, I published it in an Ellery Queen magazine 3 years before that, or 2 years before that, whatever. Anyway, and he's basically harassed and tormented by this figure until the big twist strangeness happens at the end. It's got a great cast. Johnny Depp, Maria Bello, Timothy Hutton, even in a really small role, which I'm sure he had fun playing. John Turturro, Charles Dutton.
I love Maria Bello. She doesn't do enough.
She does not. That is very true. And overall, I really like the direction of it, especially his roaming camera stuff that he does, where it like basically goes around room to room and goes through doors and through windows and around, and all of that looks really cool and neat. I think Depp is wonderfully reserved, but still his normal quirky, I'm making this character my own thing. But his I thought the ending fell really flat.
Okay.
I don't want to give any spoilers away for you. Might want to watch it again, because like I said, it's got some really good jump scares. It's got some really cool suspense thrillery moments. The twist at the end is kind of telegraphed if you know Stephen King and if you know horror movies in general. But so because of that, I guess because it's 2004, they didn't think about it, but I was expecting another twist at the very end or something else at the very end, and they didn't. They just said, and yeah, you were right. This is it. So, Secret Window. It's rated PG-13. You can find it almost anywhere.
It's an old story from, I think it came out in the 90s. I don't even think it was written in this century. It's from Midnight. And the original story is called Secret Window, Secret Garden.
Yep.
And you're right, it's a writer that's a protagonist. Imagine that, Stephen King writing about writers. He does it all the time. And it's funny that you said that Timothy Hutton's in it, because Timothy Hutton played a writer in the one that George Romero directed, The Dark Half.
Dark Half, yeah.
Yeah.
The one with the crows or whatever.
Right, exactly. But anyway, well, I think I don't remember it.
After watching that and then working on Misery the way I have been and everything else, it's very
another writer.
Because this is Misery-esque. He's in a cabin, isolated, yada, yada, but it's of his own volition. But I keep thinking that King, when he reached his height and got so good, had like imposter syndrome of, I don't really deserve this. Mm-hmm. So now all of his characters become these writers who are struggling and don't think they're good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's funny that you said that. We just got Apple TV, and I've been watching Lisey's Story, which is another Stephen King.
Yeah.
And that's about – you're talking – Secret Window is about a fan that is harassing a writer, right?
No, it's about supposedly – he's not a fan at all. He supposedly is another writer from Mississippi who's come all the way up north here because
– He thinks
this writer has plagiarized his story.
Lisey's Story is about a fan harassing a widow of a writer that has died, a famous writer that has died. All these stories are very kind of in the same realm of – storytelling with the same type of character, the same, I don't know, it's just funny.
Well, yeah, and it's interesting because, you know, the old adage of write what you know sort of thing. But also, writers can be more imaginative, I think, or known. The stereotype is a writer is very imaginative. His mind is constantly thinking and seeing things in a different way. So I think that layers very well into Stephen King's storytelling. of you're seeing something that may not be there, or is it, or is it not, because you're imagining it, because you're a writer and you imagine for a living, sort of thing. Mm-hmm. So, but anyway, I enjoyed it. Not, I won't say really enjoyed it. It was good, maybe. Great. But yeah, but I would recommend it. I think it does have some really cool moments in it.
Cool.
That's what I did. I watched a semi-scary.
Oh, well, funny that you should say that, because you went back 20 years and I went back 20 years. Mm. However, I was revisiting one in my genre world, and I did it for a reason, namely today's podcast. I saw a movie called High Tension. It came out in 2003. It is also known as Haute Tension because it is French. It's also known as Switchblade Romance. I think that was in the UK. I can't remember that. I don't know why they do these different titles.
Wasn't that directed by Aja?
It was. It's directed by Alexandre Aja. Aja? Actually, it's Alexandre, I think is how you pronounce it.
Yeah.
Aja. Mm-hmm. It's been, like I said, 20 years since I saw this movie. I wanted to rewatch it. It's a little controversial. Actually, it was very controversial at the time. And I probably knew that because of either reading Fangoria or Rue Morgue magazine. Because it was on my radar to watch 20 years ago, and I watched it. It is very violent. It is very graphic. And I, from what I had remembered, I thought it was very good. I have vast second opinions now regarding this film. As you mentioned, it's directed by Alexandre Aja. He also is, well, what I wanted to point out, which I think is ironic, is he's a horror movie director. He's not a science fiction director. He directed Piranha 3D, The Hills Have Eyes remake, Horns, which was written by Joe Hill, Stephen King's son, and the movie Crawl about the giant alligator that I watched a few years back.
Oh, yeah. and it was in a flooded house or something.
Yes.
Right? Yes. Yeah.
But I didn't know much about him until I watched Oxygen and then went back and watched this. And I thought, what is it about him that's rubbing me wrong? And first of all, the cast in this is great. It's the standout performances by the lead, Cécile de France, who is still a working French actress, but all of these people are French, so you're not going to know them. The synopsis is, it's a brutal French slasher following Marie and Alexia, who visit a secluded farmhouse only to be terrorized by a sadistic killer. After the killer murders all of Alexia's family, including her mother, father, and two little brothers, he kidnaps her, not knowing that Marie is actually in the house. So she relentlessly chases him to rescue her friend. But it's actually pretty clear they're more than friends. They're definitely a lesbian couple. But they're sleeping in separate bedrooms because it's the girl's parents' house. The movie only gets 43% on Rotten Tomatoes. I remember it being much more highly regarded. It's not that bad. However, I know now why I have a problem with it. It's he wants to be M. Night Shyamalan. I can't say his name. Aja loves a good twist. And sometimes they're not good. And the twist in this movie, as Roger Ebert says, is big enough to drive a truck through as far as a plot hole. It just does not make sense.
Okay.
It's a damn shame because this was a great movie. If he would have just pursued it to the end as a regular story without a plot twist, it would have been still an excellent movie. But the plot twist in this movie is terrible.
Interesting, because mine had a plot twist. Yours has a bad plot twist. Mm-hmm. And the one we're going to review today has two plot twists in it. Two twisty turns in it. So, I found it really interesting after watching the piece for today and then going back and looking at some of the stuff he had done as far as just listing it, but also finding some interviews with him, because I was very curious his mentality, what brought him to this project, because he's a horror writer and this is not a horror movie at all. And
it's pretty scary, though.
Well, it has some scares in it and tension, I guess. But so For those of you who have listened to us do this whole opening, we're going to do Oxygen today. Oxygen is a French film. It came out in 2021, directed, like Tim said, by Alexandra Aja, written by Christy LeBlanc. It has Melanie Laurent, Matthew Amalric, and Malik Zidi in the among the cast. Basically, we are watching a one-woman show for the majority of this particular movie. And not only a one-woman show, one woman who is trapped. So we begin at the very beginning with a woman awakening and finding herself in basically a cryopod, a life support pod. And she's been put in there because she thinks because she has some probably fatal disease, and she has been put in here until she can recover and they can cure it for her. She has very little memory or no memory whatsoever. And basically the movie is her coming into her memory and remembering things as it comes about. Her really only companion in there is the AI, which is a very perfunctory, by the book, commands have to be correct AI, which I found really frustrating at times, but also really cool from a plot device. And but she also finds out we have a ticking clock because she finds out that she only has limited amount of oxygen. Her cryo suspension thing has been damaged. And so she only has a limited amount of oxygen left and has to try to solve this whole puzzle and get out of this before her oxygen runs out. And things proceed from there. Had you seen this movie before?
No, I had never even heard of it.
What did you think? I'm very curious.
Actually, I liked it much better than Hot Tension or High Tension. I always call it Holt Tension because that's what it was called when I first saw it. Now you can't find it anywhere unless it says High Tension. But right. Yeah, I enjoyed this movie. It's clear he's improved his skills as a filmmaker. Mm-hmm. It does have a twist, but to me the twist is not as jarring or stupid as the one I saw in the other movie. The twist actually works in this, I think. And I'm not talking about the fact that she ends up in outer space. I kind of expected that. The twist is that she's a clone.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That, to me, was a cool twist. I didn't mind that at all.
I like the fact that he kind of telegraphs the whole is she in space thing. Mm-hmm. But then because he kind of telegraphs it, but then she's making all these phone calls. So we're thinking, that's not from space. She's talking from a hospital somewhere.
But then somewhere it's insinuated that she could be underground too, like she's buried alive or something. Yeah.
Well, the one guy she gets says that they're trying to get into the warehouse where she's stored because it's underground and the company says that it's not in their records. And mm-hmm. so she thinks she's talking to the police, and she's probably not. Mm-mm. So for those of you who haven't seen it, go see this because we're going to spoil it like we just have already. But go watch it before you listen to us. But I had not seen this movie before either. I pulled it from a list of science fiction films, but just because it looked really interesting. And I do like Melanie Laurent a lot. I think I've seen her in a couple of other things, and she's always been really good.
She's good.
And strong. Yeah. But I was pleasantly surprised. I really liked this movie. I liked mm-hmm. the two twists. Like you said, the fact that she's a clone was a double twist near the end there. The only thing that I disliked at all about this movie is I didn't think you needed the last scene. I wish they would have left it a little bit more ambiguous.
That right there?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah. That very last shot of just showing her and him and blah, blah. And whether some reviews, when you go find reviews online, some of them saying, well, he meant that intentionally because that's just her mind wanting that. That's just a fantasy. That didn't really happen. I went, no, it's pretty well telegraphed that's freaking happened.
Yeah. They ended up together, whether it's another clone or not. Yeah.
Right. Whether it's her third generation or whatever. Right. Yeah. But I just to take a casket, essentially, and spend 80% of your film in that casket is a challenge. Yeah. And I thought they did that really well.
Mm-hmm.
I thought the tension was great. I thought her performances were great.
Yeah, she makes a movie.
Oh, yeah. For sure. And I like the interaction of everything. I like the gore elements of it. I don't know if I would be able to put a feeding tube back in. No, I don't know if I'd be able to do that and stick this 8-inch tube back in your stomach sort of thing. I probably
umbilical
wouldn't.
Cord is what they called it. Umbilical.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Medical umbilical, I think, was what they called it. Yeah. So you liked it. I liked it. Scenes? Were there scenes?
Well, I was going to say before you mentioned gore, yeah. I did not realize this until I did a little more research on Aja, but he is a member of the unofficial Splat Pack. Have you heard of this?
No.
It's a term coined by film historian Alan Jones in Total Film Magazine about new wave directors making brutally violent horror films. And the other members are Darren Lynn Bousman, who I'm not sure who that is, Neil Marshall, who we have covered in The Descent, Greg McLean, Eli Roth, James Wan, Lee Whannell, and Rob Zombie.
Okay, so 2 out of 8, 3 out of 8 if you count.
Well, I feel like this list was probably curated around the turn of the century. So this is probably a list that's about 15 or 20 years old. But yeah.
Yeah. Yes,
when he was doing strictly horror, and most of those guys were too.
I can say that Zombie is overt with his violence. And I would also characterize just the few films that I know by those directors as there's deviance in what they're doing too. They like deviant horror. Hills Have Eyes, that remake is pretty freaking twisted.
I've ever seen it. I can't remember if I've seen it.
Dude, the motorhome coach thing, man, that whole scene is just twisted.
Okay. And out of all of those, I think Neil Marshall is strong, and I think Lee Whannell is really strong. I'm not as big on Eli Roth or James Wan or Rob Zombie, but
well, James Wan is producing a lot of really good now.
He is,
and doing a lot of A24.
Well, and he's good friends with Lee Whannell. We've talked about this in other episodes.
Yeah.
But I didn't mean to digress away from Aja. I just wanted to mention that he is an unofficial member of the Splat Pack, if that list still exists.
Well, yeah, but I think it's very interesting that a horror director directed this level of science fiction.
Because it's realistic.
Mostly, I guess because he was interested in the claustrophobia part of it, the tension part of it, maybe.
Of metaphorically being buried alive, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's a sci-fi version of premature burial sort of thing. So, yeah.
Yeah, it's an old cliche or old trope, if you consider Edgar Allan Poe.
Yeah.
Scenes
that you liked or stood out, you didn't like or whatever.
Well, you already mentioned her removing and then readministering the umbilical, which was disgusting. I thought it was wild when that shot came out and was going to like terminate her or euthanize her. And she had to think fast on her feet with that one. I don't know if there's any – there are some really good scenes, but to me, one of the most interesting things about this is her amnesia and trying to remember who she is. That I found fascinating. One of the better scenes is probably the CGI shot where they reveal that she is in this spaceship that has been damaged by an asteroid, and it just pulls back. And you see this thing circling, and then it ends up transferring into her eye, the iris of her eye.
Mm-hmm.
That's a really well-executed shot, even though I know that's all CGI. It had to be.
Yeah, it actually starts with the jump scare of the dead body on top of her.
Yes. When she opens whatever it is that allows her to see outside.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. The filter is on and everything. And then they do that big pull away, which is really good. It's a really cool shot. I agree with you. That's definitely one of mine. I thought the weightlessness, which was a few scenes before that, was another one that I thought was really cool, just the way he did it. Which suddenly her hair goes, whoom, and you go, oh, this is not good. This is not good at all.
Yeah. Well, that's the whole reveal that she's in outer space, isn't it? When she goes weightless.
Yes.
I think it is. Yeah, that's how they reveal that.
Yeah, because she ends up... Well, and that's another cool... The way they do the clone twist is another one I really liked. Because she's talked to this elderly lady on the phone a couple of times. And then she suddenly shocks herself into remembering, and it's her. And... She is a clone of her, mm-hmm. sort of thing. So that was a good scene. I thought that reveal was good.
I want to know what this disease is that her husband has, man. It looks like the zombie outbreak is happening on Earth.
Well, and that's the next one I have. I really liked the COVID sort of inspired virus or whatever it is. And the way they do that memory montage of him getting sicker and sicker and everything. I really liked that a lot. And I thought my favorite shot of it was that side angle of her in the foreground and her husband in the background. And behind them, you can see the ambulance pulling up. They're obviously in the waiting room of an emergency room. Mm-hmm. And they're both masked. And he at one point pulls his mask off and it's just covered on the inside in blood.
Right. And he's got these like
lesions.
Lesions. I was looking for a word. It's almost like just nasty spots all over his head. Yeah.
Pustules, lad. Pustules.
Yeah. Yes. Very zombie-esque. Yeah.
Yeah. So I thought that whole sequence montage was mm-hmm. good.
As far as other scenes, it's really hard to say because basically the movie is her in that box.
Yeah. I would highly praise her level of being able to do the various things she did, mm-hmm. from freaking out to calming down to being smart to being resourceful to giving up, all of those, that range of emotions are really good. And I found out watching one of the interviews, this is kind of switching to production and stuff, but they actually filmed it in chronological order, so it would be easier for her to do that.
Oh, okay.
So they actually filmed it in 6 weeks, and they filmed almost exclusively her, of course, the only person there. They designed the pod so it had various components that could be removed so the camera could go wherever they wanted it to go, of course. But they filmed it in chronological order, which I thought was cool. And it was shot during the height of COVID. So everybody on the set was masked and everything else.
Well, that makes sense. Because they would have wanted to do a movie with a small crew.
You said that close-up of her eye sort of thing. Mm-hmm. In an interview, Melanie is talking about that, and she says Alexandra told her that he was going to get the camera really close to her. And she goes, but I didn't think you meant it was going to touch my eyelashes. So that's a real shot that got really, really close to her.
Yeah.
Let's see. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say I can move on to cast if you're done with production and scenes. And like I said, I don't really have a lot because they are French, but I have a little. I'm assuming you've seen Melanie in Inglourious Basterds. Is that what you're talking about?
Okay. Yeah.
Because I have seen her in Beginners, the movie with Christopher Plummer.
Okay.
She did not learn, understand, or speak any English until she filmed Inglourious Basterds.
Mm-hmm.
That's unusual. I wonder, how did Tarantino get her if she didn't?
Did you watch this in dubbed or subtitled?
I watched it dubbed with subtitles.
Jesus Christ.
No, I mean, it was in English, but I still watch it with subtitles. Yes. That's funny week's is going to be dubbed, too. I had forgotten that it was dubbed, but go ahead.
I watched it dubbed, and then I was during that same interview between her and Alexandra that I watched on Aja, that I watched on YouTube, the reviewer who was commenting on them and everything else said, You did a dubbed version of this, but I really prefer the original French just because of your voice and everything else. So I went back and found the French version and watched at least the first hour of it with her. And yeah, it's better. French with subtitles.
I always think that subtitles are better than dubbing, which is unfortunate with next week's topic when we get to it, because I don't know that there is an undubbed version of that movie. But so back to what I was saying, do you know how Tarantino discovered her? Did she just audition?
I do not. I assume maybe an agent or someone recommended her to him.
Interesting. I like her a lot. She's very pretty and she's very good. She's just a good actress. However, she was not the first choice for this. Did you know that?
I did not know that.
Anne Hathaway was originally attached to the project.
I didn't know that.
But she later dropped out and was replaced by Noomi Rapace.
Mm-hmm.
So after the project was put into turnaround, I don't know if this had to do with COVID or what, Melanie was cast in the lead when Aja came on board. So
yeah, because he really liked her.
Right. And I guess it wasn't a French director to begin with, which is would explain why they had English-speaking people in the first rounds of it. But then when it ended up with when it ended up with Aja, Melanie came aboard, and I think that's great. I'm completely happy with this version of it. And she plays Liz Hansen, Elizabeth Liz Hansen.
And Noomi Rapace would have been okay for this, I think. But I don't know. She's really good in The Girl Who Kicked the Hornet's Nest and all those. So maybe. Yeah. I can see that, too.
I can see that. I don't see Anne Hathaway at all.
Mm-mm.
Yeah, mm-mm. I just don't. But, mm-mm. I don't know. Matthew Almeric, you mentioned, I don't know him, but he was in Munich, which is a Spielberg movie I haven't seen.
Yeah.
And he was in Quantum of Solace, which is a Bond movie I haven't seen.
I have a story about his casting, though.
Okay.
Because Aja said when they were doing the pre-prep and everything else, pre-production for the film, asked her, he said, your only real companion in this whole movie is going to be Milo. So who do you want for that? And she picked her best friend, who was also an actor. They've been friends for 20 years.
Oh, that's awesome.
And so she got to pick him and give him the role. And he was actually on set every day with her doing the voice live for her.
That's great.
So, yeah.
I have a note on him that he is currently the last non-Oscar winner to play the main villain of a James Bond 007 film, an Eon James Bond 007 film. The last three actors playing the main villains have all won Oscars.
Really? I did not know that.
And is Eon the one that did like the ones with the blonde guy? I can't think of his name.
Daniel Craig?
Daniel Craig, yeah. Is Eon the director of those? I don't know what they mean by Eon James Bond film.
No, because Terrence, what's his name, is the director of the big ones.
Maybe it's a typo. I don't know.
I don't remember him being in a Bond movie. So,
well, he was in Quantum of Solace, so I'm assuming it's that.
Oh, okay. Well, then there you go.
Yeah. Anyway, I cut and paste this from notes, and it just says Eon James Bond film, and I'm like, what's Eon mean? I don't know. Anyway, and then lastly, Malik Zidi plays Leo Ferguson.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have anything on him, actually. As far as awards, this was nominated for the Best SF Fantasy Best Science Fiction Feature Award with the Portland Critics Association. So I'm assuming that's a smaller circuit award. If it's Portland, I'm assuming it's Oregon. Could be Maine, but I don't think it's Oregon. That's the only thing I have other than the fact that it's not on the 1001 Movies You Must See Before You Die list. And I don't know that it doesn't warrant being on there, but I guess it would have to get more popularity in latter years before it would be reconsidered because it's a good movie.
You would have to.
It's definitely a good movie.
I think they would have to go on to more notoriety for it to be recognized. It would definitely be on the 1001 science fiction films you need to watch before you die.
I totally agree. Yeah. Or genre films. Yes.
I forgot the actual, I didn't write down the actual place, but the sleeper ship is going to Wolf, for lack of a better word, 359. I know it's not that because Wolf 359 is from Next Generation Star Trek. But the wolf system is a legitimate system that scientists say possibly has habitable planets around its suns. So it's interesting they picked the real destination for them to go to. And I also have in production or trivia that the original screenplay just fades to black after she goes to sleep. It does not have that last shot. But they added that to give it a ambiguous and happy ending.
Yeah, they probably did that to please audiences. Maybe they did a test and it didn't go over well.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't hate it because of that. I could see where either would be effective. I would think the blackout would be more effective, though.
Oh, yeah. I think leaving it that ambiguous is even better because she's saying, I'll see you soon, honey, blah, 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 all this kind of stuff. And then suddenly she goes to black. That would be really cool, I think. Because I think the last shot after that is actually showing the ship itself and it goes into warp because it has to, they have to get away from the well, the gravity well, before they can go into their, turn on their nuclear reactors, she says, or their nuclear jets or whatever the, she, her older self tells her. So we actually see those engines engage and it zooms out of frame.
I thought it was strange that the planet they were going to go colonate, you could only survive on the equator.
Yeah, that was just a unique astronomical thing.
That doesn't seem like a very safe place to live to me.
Well, we would have to handle that if we ever wanted to live on Mercury, because it's the same way. There's a definite, definitive line because it always keeps one face facing the sun. So one side is hundreds of degrees above Fahrenheit, and just 10 feet away, it's below freezing. So you'd have to rotate like a rotisserie all day long, just so you can stay warm.
Yeah. Did you have any trivia or anything you want to go over before we go?
That was basically it. It was shot during the height of COVID in France, shot in 28 days, like I said. I think that's all my trivia. It's interesting. My watch notes are similar to you. Great shot of the eye. Great shot of the pandemic. This is scary.
Yeah. It looks like a zombie, like the beginnings of a zombie outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that other picture behind me, when she freaks out, is pretty good. When she loses it because she can't control the situation in the with the AI.
Like I said, the gamut of emotions she goes through, from crying, thinking she's going to die, to beating it, saying "Let me out," to grabbing hold of stuff just to rip stuff just to say "Let me out of here." Oh yeah, I can relate.
She's trying to. She breaks off that needle and she's trying to jimmy the crack to where she can open the pod, which would have been disastrous had she done it.
Correct.
It starts defending itself by electrocuting her, man. That was great.
Yeah.
It's like every time she does it, it shocks her.
And I thought that was really interesting that then later on, near the end, she uses that because she realizes the shocks are what is bringing her memory back.
Mm-hmm.
And she repeatedly shocks herself three different times.
Right.
To kind of get to the final reveal of herself as the older woman saying, this is the earth's dying sort of thing.
Yeah, I was a little frustrated with all the phone call stuff, though. Especially, it's like, if this is your older self, why didn't she tell you right away? Why did she, hang up on you? Because she does at first. She hangs up on her.
Yeah, but you get the impression that's because she doesn't want to tell her the truth. She doesn't want to tell her what's really happening. But when she finds out that the government is trying to stop her and just kill her, she says, no, find your hubby, whatever his name was, Leo, I think. Find Leo.
Yeah, Leo.
So, yeah.
Okay, then we can move on to keys. I have a few. Keys? I don't have a lot.
I only have about 17, so I'm good.
Oh, wow. Okay, well, then you go.
Well, I'm not going to do one.
You'll probably trigger some in me, but
I'm not going to do one that I think you do. One of mine is cold equations, because this reminds me of a 50s short story. This could easily be a Heinlein story or even a Theodore Sturgeon 60s story, but that whole slowly you reveal, it's all one person's POV, and slowly you reveal that you're in space on a colony ship that has been damaged, blah, blah, blah. It's very 50s science fiction.
Who wrote Cold Equation? Do you know?
Nope, but I can look it up.
I'll just put it in there. It's all right. I can look it up. I just didn't know.
Okay.
I put Heinlein and Sturgeon too.
Which has been remade recently as that Stowaway movie.
Well, that's why I remember it, because that's when you brought it up to me, and that's when you first explained to me what it was.
Yeah, Tom Godwin.
Godwin, okay.
And it had a really cool Outer Limits remake. When Outer Limits came back in the 80s, like 84, 86, or whenever Outer Limits had that two-season run or whatever, they remade Cold
Open. Those are on something now, too. I can't remember. It may have been... You were telling me that Amazing Stories is on Apple TV. I saw that the original Outer Limits, I think, are on Prime now. They're on something, if you want to watch.
The original or the remake?
The original.
The reboot.
The three-season original. I think it's either three or two seasons, yeah.
Yeah, I think the original in the 60s was 3 years, and I think the reboot in the 80s was 2 years.
Because I haven't seen hardly any of those.
The ones in the 80s you should watch, they do. I think they do two different Stephen King short stories. They do the one with the
They do Grandma, the real asshole. Don't they? Or was that Amazing Grandma Stories? I can't remember.
No, I think Grandma might be Amazing Stories. But I think the very first reboot Outer Limits is William Hurt, and he's the guy who gets the box in the mail, and it's a footlocker, and he opens it up, and it's the little soldiers.
That's Battleground. Like, that's a Stephen King story.
Yeah, yeah, Stephen King's version of Trilogy of Terror.
Kind of. It's the, I don't know that they've ever done a good version of it, but the story from Night Shift is great, man, because it takes place in a high rise.
Yep, and this one does too, and it's really good. It's a good version of it. I think you would like it. Okay. That's why I said you should watch some of the reboots episodes. Some of them are really strong.
Yeah. Well, I think Ellison was a part of both, wasn't he? I know he was part of the first one. Yep. I don't know if he was part of the second wave or not. Okay.
I think he was story editor of the reboot. Okay. So, yeah.
Good.
I've got – so I did Cold Equations.
I've got Planet of the Apes.
Ooh. Why? Because of the reveal at the end?
No, because of the corpse scare. You know, that always scared me as a kid when they go to that pod and that guy's dead in it and he's all decayed or just desiccated.
Mm-hmm.
And she turns on that screen to see outside and all of a sudden there's a dead face right in her face. It just reminded me of Planet of the Apes.
Literally like 2 feet away from her.
Right.
So, yeah.
There's other movies that have done that too, but Planet of the Apes is the one that comes to mind.
I think one of the biggest ones I have is the movie that by the time this airs, it should be out, Project Hail Mary, the Andy Weir story, starts with an astronaut who wakes up with amnesia. And it's all about the whole novel and the whole movie is all about him trying to remember how he got into space aboard this ship because he has no memory.
Okay.
And so that's very similar to this.
I'm glad that he's got another good property out there because The Martian's such a good story.
Oh, God. This one's even better than Martian. It is so good. It is so good.
Cool.
I haven't seen the movie yet. I hope the movie's good.
I've got this TV movie as a child, and it's been done in more than a TV movie, and I can't think of the name of it. But my mother always used to tell me about it happened really – the actual incident actually happened in Georgia, maybe, where somebody kidnaps someone and buries them alive, and they only have X amount of oxygen to get, but until they die, and it's all about the police trying to find them and what they're doing to try to find. Do you know what that is? What I'm talking about? I can't remember.
I remember the TV movie.
Okay,
I remember it being on, and I remember seeing it.
I guess I could Google it. Maybe AI would know what it is, the title.
Not AI, just Google. AI. But, well, and there's several like that. Premature Burial, we already talked about a little bit.
That's actually the key.
And the whole claustrophobia sort of feel, even The Descent has a hugely claustrophobic feel to it. all the way through that movie. Das Boot is another one that I put down that is very claustrophobic.
Okay.
Because you realize that you're in this small enclosure and you're running out of oxygen.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, any submarine movie, really.
Yeah. Well, but most submarine movies are more action-oriented. They're battle-oriented. Das Boot is survival.
Yeah.
So it's very much similar to The Descent or similar to this, that sort of thing. There's also a couple of first-person POV games that are out that are space set where you're on a haunted... One's called, I think, Red Matter is one that you basically are waking up and trying to figure out why you are suddenly on Mars at this abandoned base. And it's really interesting. So there are some that are like that, these solo stories. I've got Gravity too. That's another solo survival and oxygen issue and in space.
Yeah.
And all that.
And female. Yeah.
Although that one from the very beginning, you're in space. So
right. That's not a twist, but yeah. The only other one I've got was lifted from IMDb, and so you've probably seen it. And that's that the turntable playing a record at 40 is an audio linear TD 4001, which was used in A Clockwork Orange.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay. I don't that's know that that's key. Really I mean, it's key. A prop, it's a yeah, prop key. It's like an Easter egg.
I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's like there are other tropes in this one, the claustrophobia trope we talked about. You mentioned the premature burial trope sort of mm-hmm. thing. Also like an escape room. This is very much like an escape room feel. I've got to figure out this puzzle in order. And every time I figure out one thing, there's three other things that I have to do. So it has that kind of feel. Mm-hmm. The countdown trope, of course, from the very beginning is in this.
But that trope's in a lot of films. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I think it's lazy writing, I think, for what's happening now. Everything has to have this fast move to the next. Even minor premise that we just finished. That's another one that has a countdown timer the entire time. Mm-hmm. So I've got one that surprised me you didn't see, which is Demon Seed. The whole,
yeah, I could see
especially
that.
When that thing came out and was trying to stab her and everything.
Yeah, and it's kind of a horror sci-fi hybrid by Dean Koontz, and this is definitely a horror sci-fi hybrid from. Yeah, I see that.
And there's one that I watched a couple of years ago named Tau, T-A-U, which is like that, except it's again a sentient house that takes a woman prisoner and says, you can't leave until you do what I tell you to do, sort of thing. It's not as bad as Demon Seed saying, you have my baby.
Oh, and I saw Demon Seed not long ago, and that movie's so cheesy. But it's worth it because it's got Fritz Weaver in it. And is it Jacqueline Bisset?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I think it is. No. Is it?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it is.
I'll have to look that up. I don't think it is.
Okay.
It may be Julia Christie.
I don't know.
You keep going.
I got really Katie Sackhoff sort of feel from Melanie in this. Very Starbuck from Battlestar Galactica's reboot and all that. She has a similar look to her. She has a similar intensity to her. So I don't know if that's a key per se, but it's definitely an inspiration to me.
Yeah, it is. It is Julia Christie with Fritz Weaver.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. And Jacqueline Bisset and Julie Christie are both of like French descent. So I guess that's why I confused them. Maybe.
Maybe.
We're on a French roll.
And the last key I really have, baguette, give me a baguette. The last key I really have is kind of just the overall AI thing. I really liked Milo. Oh, and we didn't say, I think I've got it written down. Yeah. Medical Interface Liaison Operator is okay. Milo. That's her AI that talks to her.
Yeah, because one of the things is that she could potentially have something terminal and they're cryogenically freezing her until they can cure her. That was another option, wasn't it?
I think that's the assumption we all make and she makes at the very beginning.
At the beginning, yeah.
Yeah, is that she was put in cryo because she has a terminal illness. And he actually kind of goes along with that. Would you like a sedative? And, oh, I hope you're not in any pain and all that. So,
and we neglected to mention that she was like a cryogenic scientist, and they have all those gnarly shots of like mice she's tried to freeze and that they end up being these like gelatinous masses of muscle and crap. This is gross, man.
And you're wondering what that means until the double twist at the end where you realize that's the result of her cloning experiments. Mm-hmm. And those are actually cloned mice, not real
mice.
So, yeah.
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 And
yeah.
That's Aja right there, that bringing some horror into it, you know?
Yeah. A little gore.
Yeah.
So, and my last one, like I said, is just that homage to AI. So, like 2001 with HAL or Moon, the one that has Kevin Spacey's voice for the AI in it. So, yeah. But I'm really glad I picked this one.
Yeah, I am too. Close. I had never heard of it, and I thoroughly enjoyed it. I was captivated. I was not bored at all during this movie.
Good.
Even though it's, like you said, a person basically in a box the entire movie.
Yeah.
But that's what we
think. Well, we like those, you know, small cast confined space stories.
Oh, so yeah. This is definitely one of them. I love small stories. Every once in a while, I don't mind having a large story with a large cast, but I prefer small story, small cast, almost 90% of the time. And that's what we think about this one. It is called Oxygen, which was a good title, too. Mm-hmm. We'd like to know what you think, though, if you've seen this movie, if you haven't seen this movie. Now, do you want to see this movie? Or maybe you don't, if you're claustrophobic. Let us know down in the comments below. And if you like what you've seen and heard today, you can find other shows of ours out on YouTube that are shorter versions of stuff that we do. We are also obviously on the podcast airwaves, though, if you're listening to us there. And if you want to support us and still see more fun stuff that we do, you can always head over to Patreon, where we have some subscription-based tiers. Some of it is free. A lot of that are bonus episodes that David and I have done that are like outtakes or some old bonus stuff that we did that may even be only audio, where we talk about how we met, different theater projects we've done, and that stuff. But if you want to do one of the subscription tiers, we've got shows over there that are basically television sci-fi and horror shows, including the original Star Trek, which we are now in the third season of, episode by episode, and the X-Files, of which we have done four seasons. And I think that's everything, David, except next week we're going to still be doing a foreign film, but it is horror.
And this has to be the most foreign films we've ever done in a row, right?
Well, obviously. I had forgotten that Girl Who Walks Home Alone at Night was a foreign language film, even though it was filmed in the United States. But yeah, in a row, for sure. We've usually managed to get a foreign one or two every season, I want to say, or tried.
I think we usually do two a season sort of thing. You're usually good about that because you usually pick them. I'm not a huge foreign film aficionado.
Yeah, welcome to my ranks.
So, yeah.
All right. Well, I'm going to let you go, and we will talk to you next week then.
See you next week.
All righty. Bye.